broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios. This is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I am Seth Merrow. As usual on a Sunday morning, we will take a look at some of the stakes action from yesterday. Belmont, Keeneland pulled up one from Santa Anita. They had a nice stakes card at Santa Anita as well. I pulled up one of those. Also going to take a look at Bulldog Hanover last night, which was amazing. Do a little handicapping, and then towards the end of the program, the last segment, we will be joined by Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Forum. Mike has been in Keeneland the past couple of weeks as his usual pattern, stopping by the major racing events to cover the lead up in the mornings and doing great workout work as usual down at Keeneland. So I thought we'd check in with Mike a week before, or a little less now than a week before, the Breeders' Cup, and get some of his thoughts on what he's seen in the morning over the past couple of weeks at Keeneland. So all of that coming up today on Racing Across America. Don't forget, last day to get those entries in for the online version of the Breeders' Cup Bankroll. We'll have $2,000 with an online version. We'll have $2,000 live as well. The online version, Mike Rennie will be playing that. He will have a team of 40. You can email marketingmail@capitalotb.com. Today's the last day to do that. Put your name, your account number, and in the subject line of the email, put BC Bankroll so we know that's what the game plan is. marketingmail@capitalotb.com. Going to select 40 people from all the folks who send in those emails. They'll be part of the online team. I will have a bankroll live here on Breeders' Cup. And you can come down today and put a slip in the bin to potentially get on the live team. So by all means, stop by and see if you can get on the team here at the Clubhouse Racebook for the Breeders' Cup. Again, come on down, put your name in the bin today for the bankroll team. And again, both teams, $2,000, so we're going to be able to take some swings. It should be a lot of fun. I will say for the folks who don't get selected for the teams, there's going to be one of those selected, and the Brooklyn Cowboys is going to have a $500 bet on the Breeders' Cup Classic, and one lucky person. Again, if you don't get selected for the teams, there's that consolation. One person is going to get selected to benefit from the Brooklyn Cowboy wager. All right. Again, going to take a look at some of that action from yesterday and last night. We talked about it. We had Ken Weingartner on yesterday from the U.S. Trotting Association. Have Ken on often before big events, and thought we'd reach out to him and talk a little bit about the Breeders' Crown up at Woodbine Mohawk, which, again, is the standard bred equivalent to the Breeders' Cup, and it hopefully the Breeders' Cup plays out as well, because I was watching a lot of the action last night, and it was a fun night, good crowd, enthusiastic, and fun races and fun results, and the exclamation point on the evening and the 2 days of racing up there for the Breeders' Crown was the Open Pace and Bulldog Hanover, a horse that a lot of people are comparing on the harness side to Flightline on the thoroughbred side, just kind of freakishly good. Came into last night having won 12 of 14 starts this year. He had that record 145 and change mile, which is phenomenal. I said yesterday he paced a mile in 145, and a couple days ago at Aqueduct, the thoroughbreds went a mile in 142. When I was a kid, a 3 second difference between the thoroughbreds and the standardbreds was unthinkable, but Bulldog Hanover's just been very, very special. Now, a couple of weeks ago, he was beaten by Alleywag Hanover, and Alleywag Hanover, as they come into the stretch, is right there behind Bulldog Hanover in a similar situation to a couple of weeks ago, but not similar. Last night, Bulldog Hanover just pulled away. Alleywag Hanover eventually gets caught for a second. Running second was Tattoo Artist. Alleywag Hanover winds up third. But Bulldog Hanover looking pretty good, as I say. Wins by open lengths there, and does it at a $2.40 mutual. They went 26-53-1, 120-3, 146-4. Just absolutely incredible performance. And again, Twitter was a buzz last night afterwards. I tweeted out, wow, it was just, it was a phenomenal performance. But Twitter was just, you know, singing the praises of Bulldog Hanover. And what was fun, it was racing fans of all stripes. Folks you normally see tweeting out about the Thoroughbreds were also watching last night and very impressed. Bulldog Hanover putting the cap on a really good couple of days up at Woodbine Mohawk on the Selke side of things with the Breeders' Crown. We talked about, again, some of the races. We talked a lot about Bulldog Hanover in that race, but we talked about some of the other events as well with Ken Weingartner. We mentioned Atlanta, the fabulous mayor. She came into the stretch in the lead, but could not hold off the chalky favorite Bella Bellini in her race, the Open Mayor Trot. Atlanta finishes second, but no shame there. Bella Bellini, again, went off at 90 cents to the dollar and won, but Atlanta a very good second there. We also talked about the three-year-old Philly Trot. We mentioned Jiggy Jog and Joviality. Jiggy Jog wins. Joviality runs third. So, again, they both ran very well also. And then, oh, we talked about in the three-year-old Colt Pace by the Missile, who went off as the favorite, but a close-up favorite. And we had also mentioned last night Pebble Beach, and Pebble Beach got it done and looked really good doing it in a 148-1. Amongst the three-year-old Pacers. So it was a fun night. And I'm just hitting on the highlights we touched yesterday. They had a full card of really nice Breeders' Crown. Not a full card because the ninth actually wrapped up the Breeders' Crown action. I think they actually had 12. Yeah, they had 12 on the evening. So there were some non-Breeders' Cup events, but there was a lot of Breeders' Cup action. And as I say, it was good, it was exciting, and it was very fulfilling if you were a harness fan to kind of wrap up the year. But I say that's the nice thing about the harness horses. You know, I mentioned Bulldog Hanover came in with 14 starts on the year and had been seen a couple of weeks ago, and that's the nice thing about the harness horses. Their season, they're every week, every couple of weeks, even at the top end of the game, you see them fairly often. And they had the Winner's Circle interview with the connections of Bulldog Hanover, and it was kind of, well, you know, does this wrap up the season? Or and as you know, the Breeders' Cup next week, I would think the majority of horses it'll probably will wrap up the season at the top end. But Bulldog Hanover, they said, nah, a couple weeks we're going to be at Rosecroft, and a couple weeks after that we'll be at the Meadowlands. So they still have a couple more races at least before the season wraps up for Bulldog Hanover, so we'll get a couple more chances to kind of watch and enjoy him before the year ends. So again, congratulations to the connections there, connections to all the winners and Woodbine Mohawk and the Standard Bred game itself for putting on a couple of nice nights up at Woodbine Mohawk. And as they say, hopefully next week we get a similarly good couple of days on the Thoroughbred side of things. Speaking of the Thoroughbred side of things, let's take a look at some of the action from yesterday. And I'm just going to my computer because I pulled up. I had some buyer figures from the Belmont races. And we'll kick things off taking a look at the Awad. These are two-year-olds on the grass at a mile and a 16th. I talked with David Aragona yesterday on the show, and I thought Con Man was a little bit interesting for Mark Cassie. Conman went off at 7-1, so the price was right. The finish wasn't. Conman, the number one horse, just really never got into it. Freedom Trail, I had right underneath, however. Irod Ortiz, John Terranova, coming out of a debut victory. And Freedom Trail, the number four horse, you can see, nice run here on the outside. Wins by a chart margin of 3/4 of a length as the favorite. Running second, Dandy Handyman. And then there was a a DQ in the third position. Noble Huntsman ran third, but Let's Go Big Blue got moved up to third for the purposes of payouts. But the winning side of things was Freedom Trail. Nice runner for Randy Hill and Gatsis and company. And John Terranova, as I say, Irod Ortiz on board. But as you can see, this is a nice late run here down the stretch on the outside to go 2 for 2 in the career. Both of them from off the pace. So, you know, for a two-year-old, this is a nice couple of victories given the running style. Now, all of that noted, the buyer figure, 77, ran a 71 in debut. So we'll see. The numbers, you know, it's a two-year-old, so we'll see what happens and what they might have planned for the rest of this year. I didn't see anything as far as follow-ups this year, but I do like that three-year-old subdivision on the turf. So they have potentially one of those players going into next season at least, because you can't knock a 2-for-2 record. And as I say, coming off the pace like that, a little bit notable for a two-year-old in the first couple of starts of the career. Again, 77 buyer for Freedom Trail. We'll move on now to the Kelso. I like Baby Yoda, but I wasn't totally enamored with Baby Yoda. We talked about that one yesterday as well. It just had a funny career. He had that crazy race at Saratoga last year with a 114 buyer. And just has not gotten close to that again, but has had some nice wins, not in stakes company, however. But here he opens up, and you think, well, maybe Yoda is going to get his stakes. Wait a minute, maybe not. So he's on the lead here, but coming late is number 5, Double Crown, and Double Crown goes by and winds up winning pretty easily over Baby Yoda. Long way back to Shaq Queen King third, but Double Crown gets it done as the rankest of rank outsiders in the field. I mean, Baby Yoda was 55 cents to the dollar. Then you had a 3-to-1 shot, a 6-to-1 shot, a 9-to-1 shot, a 13-to-1 shot. And the winner, Double Crown, 42-to-1. So you got $86 and change on the winner here. Double Crown, pretty solid 89 buyer. You know, it's in this field that seems a little light, but it was a field. I said when we were doing the handicapping show yesterday, the sprint division this year, I think people have kind of recognized, is not as strong as in previous years. And the strong runners are obviously going next week in the Breeders' Cup. So, you know, this was a grade three and had grade three quality on it. You would have thought the winner, particularly Baby Yoda, who was firing a series of 90s, would have. The winner would have had a 90, but no, it is a Double Crown with an 89, which again, maybe kind of validates that, you know, questionable field, not to mention the price. But it was interesting, the follow-up article from Dave Grinnig, obviously the connection's very excited. Norm Cash, who, go read the column from Dave Grinnig, because it was interesting. If you look, Norm Cash, not only the trainer, but the owner. And he says, when I'm the owner, I can kind of make these decisions to take a shot like this. And this horse was coming out of a fourth place finish just a week ago in the Maryland Millions Classic. Went off at 9-2 that day, as opposed to 42-1 yesterday. Ran fourth in that race, albeit. Second in a stakes race, a couple back at Pimlico at 5-2. So, I didn't like the horse yesterday, but I suppose there were some things, if you looked up at the board and said, that price is a little crazy on this horse. But Norm Cash gets awarded for, you know, taking the shot. And again, he said in the Racing Forum article, I own these guys. And so, you know, the horse comes out and horse is going okay. And he also said, I was shipping some other horses up for the day to New York, and I thought, up with this guy on the van and take a shot. For me, it's a business decision. And if I run in the money, I'm good. I will make some money. And even if I run last, I'm going to get enough money that it'll make sense to put him on the van and take this shot. So he went up, he took this shot, and they wind up with the winner's share of the $300,000 purse. It was also noted in the article that it was Norm Cash's first stakes win. So it's just kind of fun all around. And again, as I say, reading the Grenig article, it's just interesting to see his mindset where he's saying, you know, I'm making the decision. When I'm an owner like that, I'm making the decision as a business decision as opposed to maybe a trainer's kind of thinking process, because it was going to work out for me one way or the other. And it worked out the best one way possible yesterday for Double Crown, getting it done there in the Kelso. All right, let's move on to the pumpkin pie. And I'm just looking at, pumpkin. Maybe it's me. Or maybe I just got used to it. The abbreviation for this race takes the P out of pumpkin. And I always thought that was the correct spelling. Now I'm going to have to look it up. But the chart and actually the longer spelling here does have pumpkin in here. But the shorter, the abbreviated, so maybe I just got used to that. But regardless, pumpkin pie, Halloween season, makes sense to be running this race at this time of year. And this is a race for three-year-old fillies and mares going seven furlongs. I put Boston Post Road on top. I wasn't totally enamored with that one, but coming out of a couple of seconds up at Saratoga, looked to be in good shape, a good spot here. I thought Oksana, the number six, was going to be interesting potentially on the front end. She did get out and lead early, but faded there late. There is a late run from Dr. B. David Aragona was on the show yesterday, and he liked Dr. B. And that was a kind of a threatening run there, made a little bit of a challenge to the eventual winner, but Boston Post Road eventually held off that challenge and got it done for Chad Brown and Peter Brandt. Seven starts in the career so far for Boston Post Road, three wins, a couple of seconds, and a third, so but a talented runner for them. Had tried Stakes Company a couple times before unsuccessfully, so winds up a little stakes action yesterday. And Boston Post Road, pretty solid number, 97 buyer. That was, yes, a lifetime best. And it kind of, if you look down and you look at the buyers and you look at those 2 seconds at Saratoga, it may be just one of those horses that kind of, let me play around a little bit and figure it out, because it seems like the last three starts, the horse has been a little bit better with the 2 seconds up at Saratoga and then the stakes win yesterday. So has gotten good as a late in the four-year-old season for Brandt and Chad Brown, and a lightly raced four-year-old. We'll see what they do going forward. And this one also had been working right up here at Saratoga. The latest workout was just a week ago, right up at Saratoga, which I'm thinking is probably about ready to wind up. Although I think this year they were going to go a little bit longer than normal because of the situation, down in New York with the construction over at Belmont. I think the game plan was to stay open not much longer, because with the weather situation, you can't. But normally they would be closing about this time. But if I remember right, over the summer, that things were going to stay open perhaps another couple of weeks up at the Oklahoma. I'll double check on that. And finally, Belmont at the Big A. It was the Bold Ruler. And this was a ding-dong of a finish. I liked Factor It In. And Factor It In, the number three horse, did go off the price of 11-1 and look maybe like a challenger in the stretch, be the number three horse. But eventually a couple of horses pull away just a little bit. Running Son of a Gun, the number eight, and Eastern Bay, the number seven. And they will come down and kind of head bob it in a really fun finish here. And it winds up on the line, and I'm on the inside there. For a while, I thought I was in good shape with Factor It In, but those two late go by, and bing, 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 it is the number eight, Running Son of a Gun, getting it done. Kendra Carmouche on board for John Toscano. Nice post-race interview with John Toscano and the widow of Scott Zimmerman. I guess they claimed this horse. You talk about a clever claim. They claimed the horse for $40,000 at the end of last year. And unfortunately, Scott Zimmerman had passed away and so didn't get to see a nice victory like this. But they knew it was a pretty good claim. They had put a pretty good chunk of money in the bank since the claim, and now wind up, you know, almost a year after that $40,000 claim, picking up the better portion of a $200,000 purse in the bold ruler yesterday. And I'm just looking. Run, son of a gun, a solid 97 buyer for that one. So it's a fun stakes day down at Belmont yesterday. Pick six yesterday, had a carryover, and kicked off with an 80-some dollar horse. And so as the day progressed, you kind of wondered, well, with a price like that, what's going to happen here? Going into the finale yesterday at Aqueduct, there were four horses live. One of those was the one horse, and the one horse got it done. Inflation adjusted at 11-1 was one of the live tickets. And I'm assuming by the payoff, I don't assume, by the payoff, it was a single winner. Good for you, whoever you are, because they walked away with $234,000 on the pick six yesterday at Belmont at the Big A. And it's a little bit unfortunate because had there been a carryover today, it would have been a mandatory pay because it is technically the end. I mean, they're going to be still be at Aqueduct on Thursday, but it's technically the end of the Belmont at Aqueduct meet. And so there would have been a mandatory pay in the Belmont pick six today. But I can't knock somebody walking away with a chunk of change like that. I will say, hopefully it's one guy or a group of guys who chipped in some money and wound up with a nice big score, you know, the score of a lifetime kind of a thing. All right, let's move on to Keeneland yesterday. The Bowman Mill, two-year-olds going six furlongs. I like Bourbon Bash. Bourbon Bash doesn't run badly, winding up second in here, but Super Chow gets it done. And I did not use Super Chow in my mix, but it is Super Chow, the number five, winning it pretty easily. I mean, I thought at the top of the stretch, my horse, number seven, Bourbon Bash, was going to make a nice run. But then Super Chow just has another gear and opens up the chart margin, winds up to be five lengths. Bourbon Bash second, Raise Cane third. But Super Chow, a little bit interesting. Chantel Sutherland on board. She comes up from Gulfstream Park and gets the stakes victory at Keeneland. And when she brought the horse back to the winner's circle, you know, the connections and the grooms and whatnot, and they were all high-fiving with Chantel. So good for her to come up. She was on this horse in the career debut down at Gulfstream. That was a nice win. Then they shipped up, tried the Saratoga Special, and ran third there behind Damon's Mound in Gulfport. And then connections popped this horse over to Pimlico and won a non-winner, so won pretty easily. So came into the race, two wins and three starts. Now three wins and four starts, and a nice stakes victory at Keeneland as well for Super Chow. So this could be a little sprinter to watch as we go forward to the three-year-old season, having shown some nice ability so far in three career starts. And unfortunately, I didn't find any buyers yet for the Keeneland stakes. But keep your eyes open. I'll be interested to see what that one wound up with as a buyer. In the Bryan Station, I liked Wit in here. These are three-year-olds on the grass. I liked Wit coming out of the win in the Better Talk Now up at Saratoga for Rapoli and Pletcher. And Wit is the number eight horse. Runs pretty well, but in another ding-dong battle, coming under the wire, Balnikoff, coming in from Southern California for Phil D'Amato, the number two horse, is going to get the nod here. And you can see it looks like at this point, oh, Witt's home free. But wait a minute. And at the wire, the nod goes to Balnikoff. Over Witt, Axelm third in there. Tyler Gaffleone was on board, making that jockey's race down there very intriguing. And I'll touch on that in a moment as well. Both the jockeys and the trainer's race came right down to the last day and got kind of exciting. But Tyler Gaffleone gets the stakes victory on Balnikoff. And finally, stakes action yesterday, the Fayette. Mile and eight for the handicap division types. And in this one, I put First Captain on top, and I'll have to check in with some of the West Point folks and see what their thoughts were, how First Captain came out. Just never got into it. First Captain, number four horse, wind up last in the field of five, coming off a third in the Jockey Club behind Olympia, and just never got into this one. It's West Will Power, who I had right underneath for Brad Cox, Gary and Mary West, Joel Rosario on board, and wins pretty convincingly. As you can see here, the chart margin just under seven lengths. Folsom second, Last Samurai third, but West Will Power, nice little runner for these connections, had been in the exacta nine times and 11 starts before yesterday, but now puts a nice little grade two on the resume, and so nothing like a little black type for a horse, West Will Power, getting it done as the, you know, close-up second choice, $4.74 in the five-horse field. One more I want to touch on. As I said, they had a nice stakes card yesterday at Santa Anita, but I pulled up the Twilight Derby just because I like that subdivision of three-year-olds on the turf, and that's exactly what this is. And as we get late in the year, those opportunities start to shrink a little bit. But I found this one interesting because Speaking Scout, three-year-old turfer for Grand Motion, and they've kind of cleverly picked their spots with this one. It was coming out of a win in the Hawthorne Derby. The number eight horse gets the lead here late, Speaking Scout, as the 2-1 favorite, but then gets run down by Cabo Spirit. That won the 5-2 second choice. And again, I always like those three-year-olds on the turf, and I thought it would be interesting to watch this one because, again, Speaking Scout, six exacta finishes and 12 starts, three wins, 3 seconds, including that win in the Hawthorne Derby. But you look at this one, the Hawthorne Derby, the Dueling Grounds Derby, Kentucky Downs, the Bold Edge Derby at Laurel, the Kent at Delaware Park, the Audubon at Churchill. Speaking Scout for Grand Motion has been a real traveler in the three-year-old season. They shipped out to try the Twilight Derby, the Grade 2 event out at Santa Anita. Wind up second, though. But Cabo Spirit, nice little runner on the three-year-old turf side of things out there in Southern California. Had come out of a fifth in the Del Mar Derby, but had won the La Jolla prior to that at Del Mar. A little bit earlier, close-up second in the Cinema at Santa Anita. So another one that was bouncing around doing pretty well in the three-year-old turf and or synthetic stakes out in California. But that one gets up late to get it done. And again, the second choice price of 5-2 out there in Southern California. All right, we'll take a break. And I'll come back and maybe just do some quick news and notes before we reach out to our friend Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Forum. We will check in with him again to get a little update on some of the morning action at Keeneland leading into the Breeders' Cup. So again, come back and do some quick news and notes before we turn it around. Stay tuned.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
As promised earlier, a little update on the final standings at Keeneland, which again came down to the last day. It was a lot of fun. on the jockey side of things. It came down to the last race. It was a tie between Tyler Gaffalione and Luis Saez, and Luis Saez won at a price, won the finale, and wins the jockey title by a single win. 21-20, Luis Saez over Tyler Gaffalione for the fall title at Keeneland. Joel Rosario in third with 13. So 21-20, and then you jump down to 13 for Rosario. But it was a nice battle on top of Luis Saez and Tyler Gaffalione. So congratulations to Luis and his agent, Kieran McLaughlin. On the trainer side of things, that was also a nail-biter. Coming right down to the final day, trainer side of things, Keeneland Fall Meet, Brad Cox 11, Todd Pletcher 10, Wesley Ward 10. So that was a three-way battle. Then you jump down to Mike Maker and Ken McPeak, who both wound up with 7 nice meets, 6 for Steve Asmussen, 5 for Graham Motion. But on top, Brad Cox, single win over Todd Pletcher and Wesley Ward. So there are your final results for Keeneland Fall. Belmont at the Big A, as I say, that meet, we're still going to be at the Big A on Thursday, but the meet technically comes to an end today. And just to give you a little update on where that stands, it seems like things are pretty much already in the win column on both sides. On the jockey side, Irad Ortiz has a 5-win lead over Javier Castellano, 32-27. Manny Franco in third with 23. Jose Lescano, 22. Dylan Davis, 21. But a 5-win lead for Irad. Chad Brown with a 6-win lead over Linda Rice, 23-17. Todd Pletcher with 16. Christophe Clement, 12. Bill Mott, 9. But again, 6-win lead for Chad Brown. 5 wins for Irad Ortiz. You would think those battles are kind of taken care of at this point. And again, technically, the meet, not technically, the meet ends. Belmont at the Big A ends today. And again, construction taking place over at Belmont. That's why they were there. That's why they were at Aqueduct this fall. But the dates that would normally have been Belmont were designated Belmont at the Big A for, you know, bookkeeping purposes and whatnot, and record keeping and all that type of thing. Got the new abbreviation, the BAQ. That we'll see what people make of that in the future. Although I think there's going to be another, it sounds like another Belmont at the Big A maybe next fall. In spring, I think they'll be back, obviously, with the Belmont Stakes, but with future construction there, it looks like there may be another one of these quirky meets. We will see. But regardless, one way or the other, they wrap that up for, again, record-keeping purposes today, Belmont at the Big A. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will be joined by Mike Welch. He's been live down at Keeneland for the past couple of weeks looking at the morning workouts. We'll get some of his thoughts on those morning workouts leading into the Breeders' Cup and maybe who's tipping their hand and who's not. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Doesn't get any better than this, Tom. They're all in line, ready for the start.
And they're off. American Pharoah comes into his final furlong. Breeders' Cup winner, a horse of a lifetime. This is unbelievable. It's one of the most sensational ever.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Stone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Two-on travels head-to-head with Joe Hart bearing down on him. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, we are joined now by Mike Welch. You catch his work, the hard copy of the Daily Racing Form or DRF.com. Great workout reports. Certainly up at Saratoga, we feature Mike all the time and tout the workout reports. But coming into big events like the Breeders' Cup, also important information. So I thought we'd reach out to Mike and see what's happening in the morning down at Keeneland. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Seth.
Happy to have you on board. And before we get to some specifics, talk a little bit about it because I see there's the nice Breeders' Cup workout package coming up. So just tout that a little bit, the DRF package.
Yeah, as usual, I mean, we'll have workout reports for Friday's card and Saturday's card. I think we'll have some stuff for the undercard races, but it's going to be mostly Breeders' Cup oriented. And I bet Donald Harris was here a couple of weeks before I got here, so he'll fill in some of those blanks. And you know, I've seen a lot of work since I've been here. I got here 9 days ago, or 10 days ago now, I guess. The days all kind of blur into each other after a while, but been pretty busy here. Yesterday was the busiest Saturday before the Breeders' Cup at the host site that I ever remember. And part of that has to do with, I guess, maybe the turf course not being open at Churchill at the moment, and some of the stuff going on at Belmont with the main track not being open as long as usual in the mornings, leading some trainers to get here a little bit earlier than normal.
Let's jump in and get some thoughts, because I pulled up a little video from yesterday, Flightline out on the track, and reading your comments and really everybody's comments, it seems like in the morning since he's arrived at Keeneland, he is validating what a monster he is. Talk a little bit about Flightline on the track yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, look, he is what he is. He's just a superstar, and he showed it in his gallops a couple of mornings earlier in the week, and then his work yesterday did not disappoint. He just does everything so easily, effortlessly. He moves so smoothly, stretches out. He's got the longest stride I think I've ever seen. It was just almost perfect work. You know, it was almost like a maintenance work for him since he had such a big work the week before he left Santa Anita. You know, I don't think things could have gone better as far as John Sadler or his assistant and exercise rider Juan Labor. You know, they both were all thumbs up afterwards.
Yeah, the Breeders' Cup video that we're watching here has a little insert down in the corner of the connections watching, and they certainly seemed all pleased afterwards. And I also pulled up a little bit of video of the crowd. Somebody had taken a little video of the crowd there. And what was your impression of the crowd? Because they'll never match American Pharoah up at Saratoga. That's a memory that is indelibly etched, that morning workout with thousands of people there. But it looked like a pretty good crowd showed up yesterday at Keeneland for Flightline.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I was talking to someone the other day and telling him about that morning at Saratoga with American Pharoah. They had maybe as big a crowd there in the morning as most tracks get in the afternoons right these days. But, yeah, it was a pretty sizable group on hand. And, you know, the problem is it was still dark then, or pretty dark. Dawn was just about ready to break. So if you're standing in the grandstand and you're not, you know, you're just a fan and you're not sure what to look for it, he might have been by them before they realized, because he came out right after the break. And, you know, he doesn't come in front of the stands first where you could see him and follow him around. He just broke off and you know, here he comes as a blur past the grandstand. You know, he's in front of you for 5 or 10 seconds and boom, he's gone into the turn. But for those that, you know, did get a chance to even see him briefly, I'm sure they appreciated it, and it'll be a memory, you know, they'll take home with him, especially if he does what everybody expects him to do next Saturday and, you know, win impressively here in the Classic.
And what is the buzz there? What are people down there kind of thinking and expecting from Flightline?
I think they expect what they expect of most superstars. They expect him to win and not just win, but win easily. And you know, this is a pretty stellar field. I mean, it's a lot tougher bunch than he's met at any point so far. So, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, will he go to the lead and get pressed by Life is Good or somebody else? Will he sit back? You know, obviously in the Pacific Classic, he had a little bit of early issues and still was able to overcome them and win off by himself. this is a stronger field, and you know, the trip could have some bearing in the outcome. I mean, if he's the true superstar we all think he is, in the end it won't make any difference. But you still got to run your race, you know. I mean, everything looks good on paper, but that's why they run the races. And 1-5 shots get beat, not all the time, but they do get beat. And we'll see, you know. On this stage, though, as the final race of what figures to be a spectacular card, it's going to be eagerly anticipated, and it's going to be because of his presence here next Saturday.
Well, you mentioned and you alluded to the scenario that I find most intriguing next week, and I pulled up Life is Good and his workout yesterday, I believe, as well. And people are coming out of that 97 buyer win in the Woodward, and they're a little bit maybe skeptical of Life is Good. But, wow, this is a nice horse. And if these two hook up early, boy, that scenario to me is very intriguing. Again, we're watching the Life is Good workout here yesterday. Talk a little bit about Life is Good.
Yeah, it's hard to get a good read on his last race. I mean, because it was an off-race track. And people, you know, again, were expecting him to win as a 1-5 shot or whatever he was that day, you know, easily, and he didn't. And there's some speculation that maybe he's a little over the top. It's been a long campaign for him. And workout-wise, I'm sort of seeing that a little bit. Look, his work yesterday, by anybody's standards, even last week's work, which I wasn't thrilled with, but, you know, by anybody's standards, you look at the numbers, the fractions, the final times, they're terrific. But he was a workout superstar to me all year long, back at the spring at Belmont, during the summer at Saratoga. I don't see that superstar in the morning from him. I just don't see him dragging the rider around. I just don't see him galloping out like he used to, even though he actually galloped out a mile faster yesterday than Flightline did. Perceptually, he's just not quite what he was this summer in the morning, I'm talking about. And that could be mean nothing, but it also could be an indication that, again, he may be a little over the top. So it'll be interesting to see what takes place here, what his strategy is going to be. Does he want to get in an early duel with Flightline? I don't think so. But if he breaks well and Flightline doesn't and he gets loose on the lead, I mean, it could make a big difference here. So it is an intriguing scenario. A lot of people just don't think Life is Good wants to get a mile and a quarter because of his subpar effort in Dubai. But like Todd said, that track that day was very laboring. That's probably not going to be the case here next Saturday, and he thinks he deserves another chance at a mile and a quarter, and I don't disagree there. I mean, there was some thought that if you go in a dirt mile, you're going to be an odds-on favorite and probably going to win it again. But, you know, to their credit, they're going to take a shot and go up against the big horse.
Yeah, I think he makes it. I think it's a very salty field, and you know, Flightline deserved favorite off what we've seen so far. But boy, to me, it's not a gimme. I'm really intrigued. I want to talk a little nuts and bolts because when we watched the, and you kind of mentioned it when you talked about the fans watching the Flightline workout, and we pulled it up. He had the blinking light on his cap, and over the past week or so, I've seen video of a couple of workouts where almost all you can see is the blinking light of the workout horse, whoever it may be. And I'm just wondering from a nuts and bolts perspective, what are those kind of pitch black workouts do to you trying to clock? And it, is the video maybe darker than it is if you're standing there in real life?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you can see better on a video than you can in actual live time. And it's been kind of a bit of a clocker's nightmare here for several reasons. I mean, first of all, it is dark here, not only for the first entire training session, but it's still dark when the horses come back out after the break. Secondly, the first week I was here, there were no saddle towels on the Breeders' Cup horses. So you have to try to pick out, you know, the Breeders' Cup horses from the 25 Asmussens or the 25 Todds that are going to train that morning or maybe work that morning. You have to pick out the individual ones that are actually the Breeders' Cup ones, amongst all the other workers. Last Saturday, we probably had 50 works in the first 6 minutes after the break in semi-darkness, and four or five of those were Breeders' Cup horses. And for me and the regular clockers, it was tough. And sometimes you just can't catch them all. Now that they have their towels, it's a little easier. But again, when it's dark, if they don't have a light especially, and not all of them do, it can be an issue. trying to find them, or when they all want to go at the same time, which just seemed to happen yesterday, about five or six of the Breeders' Cup horses. Not when Flightline went, and Malafat was right behind him, but shortly after Malafat finished, there were at least a half dozen Breeders' Cup horses either starting their breezes or in the process of their breezes, and it gets a little tough. I have some help from Dave Grenning. I have some help from Donald Harris here, too, maybe to fill in some blanks that I don't see. But this has been a difficult one to cover. I mean, it's dark at Santa Anita in the morning, too, when we're out there early on. Churchill is a clocker's dream because they have the lights from 5:30. So you don't have to deal with the darkness. But in the dark, it can be difficult. And you get really happy when these guys put their lights on. Steve Asmussen's workers have their lights on. Doug O'Neill's workers, work with lights on, but not all of them do.
No, I was actually thinking of you and the other clockers, but when I saw some of those works with the lights on the helmet, I thought, boy, that's got to be tough. On the flip side, and you've already kind of mentioned it, the saddle towels must be like the clocker's dream out there.
Yeah, no, it's a big help, although, again, when it's dark and they go down the backside, you know, you can see that there are saddle towels, but you can't see who's who. I mean, they used to have, or most Breeders' Cups, they will have a special, like, 10-minute window for just the Breeders' Cup horses to work. And now, here they have not. So, you know, you can see a bevy of Breeders' Cup towels going down the backstretch. You can't see, in a lot of cases, who they are. Sometimes you recognize them. Sometimes you don't. So you don't know, is this one going to work? Is that one going to work? Is this one just galloping? So that factors into the equation, too. I wish they had done that here yesterday, as far as just letting the Breeders' Cup horses out there, just the workers. It would have made things a little easier trying to pick out the ones you really need to concentrate on. But we got through it pretty good. There were 40-some-odd Breeders' Cup horses work yesterday. They were pretty well spaced on the grass, and that came in the light. And the 9 o'clock works with Hot Rod Charlie and Life is Good. It was light by then, so that helped. But we caught most of them. I think we got all or most of about 38 of the 40 Breeders' Cup workers yesterday. And those will go on our clock report for next week. Obviously, I didn't have enough time or enough space to put them all in the written report or on the video we did yesterday. But we'll have reports on just about everybody that worked here yesterday. And we had 20 the day before, too, and that seemed like a lot, especially the ones that were in the dark at 5:30, 6 o'clock and right after the break.
I'm going to go to the day before because I pulled up some video. A couple of horses I'm intrigued with, Chocolate Gelato, and Chocolate Gelato is going to be on the inside, but Atomically is going to be on the outside here. I like Chocolate Gelato coming out of that win in the Frisette. This will be obviously the juvenile fillies we're talking about. Chocolate Gelato again on the inside as we watch the video. But Atomically is interesting as well off the last couple of wins down at Gulfstream. And so you being down at Gulfstream, maybe you can talk a little bit about Atomically as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say how good Atomically is because, I mean, she was very impressive winning that stake there. She ran a second faster than the boys, and the horse that won the boys is undefeated, and was supposed to run in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I'm talking about Awesome Strong, but he got injured, so he's not going to run. This was kind of a maintenance work, but it was very good for a maintenance work. I mean, they went off slow. They finished up pretty well, you know, pretty much in hand, and they galloped out a long way. So I thought it was a good work for Chocolate Gelato and Atomically, just from a visual standpoint, that you never mind the final time. Sometimes the final times don't really do justice to some of these workouts.
Yeah, as I say, I find Chocolate Gelato, I'd probably put her on top, but Atomically was interesting to me because, as you said, that same day she ran faster than the boys down there. Gulfstream moves into the Pletcher Barn, kind of interesting. Wanted to pull up, I couldn't find the video, but I did find a photo, but of a horse that it seems like you and some other people were kind of raving about the workout for Blue Stripe the other day. So as I say, I just found a video there, but talk about Blue Stripe.
No video. I don't think anybody shot her.
Oh, that's why I couldn't find anything, but we'll be in the distaff, and as I say, it seems like everybody raved about the workout.
Well, I don't know who else raved because I don't think many other people were here, but and it is not on video, but I know I saw it. I really loved what I saw. I mean, I've never seen her work before, so I don't have anything to base it on, but just watching her, she finished great, and the gallop out was sensational. I mean, she went a mile in 1:39 and 1, putting that into some perspective. The two works of Life is Good here, he's galloped out 140 and one, and Flightline galloped out 140 and three. So just that in and of itself, I mean, was the track a little faster on Wednesday when she worked? Maybe, but just visually, I just loved what I saw. And on paper, she's hard to go for. I get it. That's a loaded field. Malathat, Nest, Clarriere, Society, they're all working really good, too. So she's going to search results. She's going to have her hands full. But, you know, from a clocker standpoint, when you see something like that and the horse is going to be a big price, sometimes you just have to throw the form aside, hope maybe she's just coming up to her, you know, the best race of her career, and if she did run that, maybe it'll be good enough. But just from a clocker standpoint, I love what I saw from her.
Yeah, as I say, reading your tweets, I knew that was one I wanted to touch on. Before we let you go, anybody in the mornings who's maybe kind of would otherwise be floating under the radar who is kind of stamping themselves as one to watch this coming weekend?
Well, she was definitely the most floating under the radar one. But I thought domestic spending has looked very good here.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I'm not sure where in the what price the horse is going to wind up in there. I think it was a kind of a late decision by Chad to run him, and I think it was based on the two works he's had here. I thought he was excellent yesterday. He ran away very impressively for Virginia Joy on the gallop out. He was asked a little bit more than that horse was, but he really responded and looked good for the second week in a row. So also turf-wise, I've liked what I've seen from Major Dune in Annapolis. And another horse I do like a little bit, and again, you know, he's not going to be the favorite because of the field, but in the juvenile for Chad Brown, I just like what I've seen from Blazing Seven so far. K-Rock's going to be a huge favorite. So I don't know where Blazing Seven's going to fit paramutually into the scheme of things, but he's been doing terrific.
Yeah, you would think with Cave Rock, a lot of the others are going to offer some value. Nice, very good. And one more before I let you go, because I'm curious, you know, looking at Twitter last night, there were a lot of thoroughbred people tuned in, and I know you've got to hit the sack a little early to get to the track early, but I'm wondering, did you just check out the Bulldog Hanover and the Breeders' Crown last night?
No, I did not. I did not. Did he win? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very good. 146 and...
I guess he's the flight line of harness racing right now, right? Correct?
That's what everybody says. And I was laughing. I had Ken Weingartner on yesterday from the U.S. Trotting Association. And then a little bit later, I talked to David Aragona. I mentioned to both of them. Bulldog Hanover had paced the 145 mile earlier. And Friday at Aqueduct, the thoroughbreds went a mile in 142. When I was a kid, a three-second difference between the thoroughbreds and the standardbreds was unthinkable. So, yeah, I think he is the flight line of standardbreds. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you need those kind of things, no matter you know, whether it's harness or thoroughbreds. You need a superstar, you know, for people to pay attention to, and I think a lot of people are rooting for flight line to validate that. On Saturday and, you know, give us the buzz we need and then look forward to hopefully him coming back again and running again next season, they're sort of saying that's going to be the case. You never know if horses go to stud so early because of the value there, but he's got to get through this. But should he, you know, win off by himself and then come back again next year, maybe like American Sarah, he'll come to Saratoga one morning and work out. We'll have 3,000 people there to see Flyline work.
That's I'd like that. And they have, certainly this year, they have made a lot of noise about potentially coming back next year. So we'll see. We'll keep our fingers crossed. I'm knocking wood here as well. Mike, we'll let you go, but really appreciate the visit. And again, I'll tell people to go to the Racing Forum to check out your articles and the work and pull up the Breeders' Cup workout report as well. But again, thanks for the conversation. We'll talk again down the road.
Yep, looking forward to it.
Appreciate
Thank
it. You. Mike Welch from the Daily Racing Forum, again, does great work checking out the workouts leading into the big events. And this week, that means the Breeders' Cup. And we're a week out, as less than a week. Friday, we kick off with the juveniles. Saturday, it's going to be a great day of racing. Don't forget, we have the two big bankrolls coming up. You can take your chance to get on those bankrolls. by sending an email to marketingmail@capitalotb.com. Put your name and account number in the email, BC Bankroll up in the subject line. Today's the last day to do that, however, so make sure you put your name in the hat to potentially get on the online team. The live team, you can come down to the clubhouse today, put your name in the bin to potentially get on the live bankroll team that'll happen next week here at the clubhouse racebook. And don't forget, I think there may be some limited seats still available. So check in, give us a call or stop at the racebook to reserve your seat for the Breeders' Cup this coming weekend. And you will get a commemorative glass as well. Either way, we'd love to see you down here joining us for the Breeders' Cup. Always a lot of fun with the big crowd and buzz. And you can kind of root for your horse and other folks are rooting. And it's always a lot of fun when you're cashing some tickets with a group of folks around to pat you on the back after a nice win. So it should be fun here at the Racebook next weekend. It always is Breeders' Cup the couple of days. And this week, I think we're all starting to get excited for what looks like a great lineup of Breeders' Cup races. All right. Tomorrow, you know, right now you can pull up pre-entry PPs and kind of start your handicapping. But tomorrow they will actually, you know, finalize the fields and you'll have post positions and morning lines and whatnot by tomorrow night. Oh, and Breeders' Cup seminar. The annual Capital OTB Breeders' Cup seminar happens on Wednesday, 4 o'clock on the Capital OTB YouTube channel. And then it'll be on all of our social media channels as well, over on Twitter and Facebook. You can watch. But it's Anthony Mormino and I Wednesday. Cup race we'll be taking a look at. Otherwise, I'm going to wrap things up for a Sunday morning. I'll be back as usual about an hour and a half or so for the Sunday afternoon OTB Live. I've got a little Keeneland and some Belmont at the Big Eight. No, I have some Churchill. Always when the meet changes, it takes a couple of days. It's like when the year changes, you write on the check the wrong date. So I'm going to have to get in the Churchill frame of mind for another 2 days, and then they're back to Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup. But Churchill kicks off with a really nice two-year-old, as usual this time of year, and the day after Keeneland, they start out with a nice two-year-old card. So there'll be some potentially you'd have to think Derby and Oaks runners we will see on the card, because there's some stakes as well. So we'll look at some Churchill this afternoon, the wrap-up day, Belmont at the Big A. I'll probably also pull some Saratoga harness in, because they're always fun on a Sunday afternoon. And now after last night, we're all in a harness frame of mind. So it should be a fun Sunday afternoon on OTB Live. And again, we'll kick that off in about an hour and a half or so. All right, Seth Merrill, Racing Across America, Sunday morning. Thanks for joining us. Always appreciate it. Hopefully we gave you some good ideas and some good thoughts and some fun and some entertainment and some information. And we'll try to do more of that in an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. So we'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.